Hey, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I don't really know yet because I woke up half an hour ago, but I think that I'm okay.
That's good.
I was listening to Taylor Swift, but not sad Taylor Swift, so.
Oh, sad
Taylor. Fearless re-record is just getting me through the day, but I was actually listening to Reputation this morning because it's such a bop.
True.
Also, 1989 is the album that people think is coming out next, and so I think we should check up on Diana Agron.
Yes, we should.
That's Wonderland's in that album. Anyways, hi people. Welcome to Mary, not so Bloody Mary, forgot the name of our podcast. That's really sad. I'm Quinn, and that's Grace.
Hi, I'm Grace.
Grace, how are you doing? Like, what is up?
I'm fantastic.
I slept better
with my sister last night.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That's good. What did I do last night? I drove in a roundabout for the first time. That's fun.
Oh, yeah. How was
that? It actually was really easy. So, but my dad said it gets harder. When we go on, like, the ones that are going to your house.
Because
I was, like, I got to learn how to drive roundabout so I can drive to Grace's house and just stop there and honk my horn at her until she comes in.
We were thinking of driving to, or biking to Collingwood the other day, but we were like, no.
That's what my mom said that we should do, except bike to Stainer.
Yesterday?
Yeah, and I was like, but we're already hiking, Mom. I'm not doing both of those things.
True.
Yeah, it was so nice yesterday. Anyone that's in, like, Ontario, it was really nice yesterday, except for the fact that I know that that means global warming, so it's kind of sad.
Yeah, but we don't think about that.
I tried to push it all aside.
We think of the positives.
Positive. Legally Blonde, the musical. Amazing. They need to be I can't even think of the word. They need to go back on Broadway. I don't care. It's a really good show. Okay, so everybody, today we are not here to talk about Elle Woods. Wish we were, but she's not got a bad reputation, so she's fine.
She's good.
She's good. We're going to talk about Edward Tudor today. Henry's little only boy child. To be fair, he did have Henry Fitzroy, but unfortunately for Henry Fitzroy, he was born on the other side of the blanket, and therefore he didn't get to inherit the throne. He also died before Henry died, so
right,
didn't work out well for him. But I don't think we have enough on Henry Fitzroy to ever do an episode on him, so R.I.P. to Henry Fitzroy. You would have loved I don't know. You would have loved healthcare.
Yeah.
Then maybe you wouldn't have died at 18.
Poor person. Poor guy.
Poor Edward. Not Edward. Actually, you know what? Poor baby Edward. That's where we're going to start. So, Edward was born, as all people are. I don't know. He was born on October 12th, 1537. So, it's like, I can't count right now. That's 484 years ago, because last year it was 484 years since Anne Boleyn's execution, and this was 1 year after that. Yeah.
Wow.
So he's, like, really old now. Haps Edward. In his mother's room, wow, at Hampton Court Palace, which Elizabeth and Mary were both born at Greenwich, and so I guess Henry decided that he didn't want to have this new baby be born at Greenwich because it was bad luck for him. I don't know. He's a bit superstitious that way.
Yeah.
I mean, Henry was born at Greenwich, but I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't feeling like he liked himself too much at the moment. He was the son of Henry VIII by his third wife, Jane Seymour. Bessie.
Bessie.
It's you, Grace.
It is me.
Yeah. Throughout the realm, the people were, like, really excited for the male heir because they'd been waiting for him for so long. Yeah, you know what? Kind of fair that they're that excited because it's 1537.
True.
There was a lot of relief as well because they weren't sure how much longer they could wait for a male heir before Henry would just, like, die when the kid was, like, two.
Right.
But, like, no one's going to say that. That would be illegal. So they sung songs that are T-Dums. I don't know how you say it. It's T-E and then D-E-U-M-S. They're like a praise God thing, I think. I think they're like kind of Catholic. I've never ever done one at my church, but I don't know if Catholic people still do them. Catholic people, let me know. Bonfires were lit like all over like streets and stuff, so I guess they're just starting some fires. And there's a bunch of, they did like a gun salute for him. But I don't really understand what they mean in this, because the quote says there was shot at the tower that night above 2,000 guns. I hope they didn't shoot 2,000 guns. That's a lot of guns.
Bit concerning.
Bit concerning. Prince Philip only got 41, so R.I.P. Prince Philip. Rest in peace, love. Actually, I feel bad for Queen Elizabeth. Anyways, moving on. Queen Jane, who appeared to recover very quickly from the birth, sent out personally signed letters. So she didn't write them. She just, like, signed them. Announcing the birth of a prince that was conceived in most lawful matrimony between my lord, the king's majesty, and us. So I guess us is her. She's referring to herself in plural. But I think they did that then, so I'll just let it be. It's just a bit weird, Jane.
Wait, can you hear the rain outside?
No.
It's, like, so loud, okay.
It's not even raining at my house.
Okay, carry on.
It's just a little wet. He got christened.
Yay!
On October 15th. I got christened, like, 4 months after I was born. I guess they weren't worried that I was going to die. I don't know.
I have no idea when I was christened.
I don't think babies get christened immediately anymore. You, like, wait. When I remember at church one time, this, like, 12-year-old girl got christened, and I was really confused because I thought only babies could get christened, but you can just do it whenever you want. I was like, Mom, what the heck? Yeah. So his half-sisters had really important roles in the ceremony, as we talked about in our last Mary episode. Lady Mary, who was 21 at the time, was godmother, and Elizabeth, who was 4 years old, got to carry the chrism cloth. And then the garter king of arms, don't know what that is, proclaimed him as Duke of Cornwall and Earl of Chester. He doesn't get to be Prince of Wales yet because that's like a whole other ceremony. But go, Edward. You've already got two titles. You're 3 days old.
Look at that.
Hop off. Unfortunately for Edward, he's now going to be one parent less, so he's only gonna have one parent now. Jane fell ill on, I don't think this is right, but she fell ill and died on October 24th. I know that's right. Henry wrote to Francis the First of France. Why is his name Francis of France? That's just okay. That divine providence hath mingled my joy with bitterness of the death of her who brought me this happiness, which is like kind of fair. Like, he finally gets the son, but like, she died. R.I.P. Jane. But luckily, Edward was like a really healthy baby, so thank God, because Anne of Cleves would have been pressured a lot more if Edward hadn't been a healthy baby. Mm-hmm. But he fed really strongly from the outset. His dad was, like, really delighted with him. Obviously, he's, like, obsessed with boy children. Yeah. He also was really into Mary and Elizabeth when they were little babies. So I think he just likes kids.
He's just like, children, heirs. Yay.
But if Mary and Elizabeth's moms had given him boys, he would have been, like, awesome with Mary and Elizabeth the whole time. He was good with Elizabeth when she got older. I think the amount of time that he spent away from Mary and the fact that Catherine kind of made her not agree to him kind of poisoned their relationship of theirs. But I do think that they did repair it a little bit. In May 1538, Henry was observed dallying with him in his arms, and he, like, held him in a window so that the people could see him. There's a scene about it in the Tudors when he, like, comes to visit him, and he's like, are you keeping him clean? And they're like, yes your majesty. And he's like, good. And then he just, like, picks him up and goes on a balcony, and there's just all these, like, people there, and they're, like, waving, and Edward is, like, two, and he just looks really confused.
Love that.
Yeah, well, because they have to be like, look, we're still here, we're all still here. The royal families do that a lot, like, and they go out on balconies so that, like, people can see them.
Right.
Because when people don't know what they look like. They're just, like, random people that rule over them. So it's good to have them seen. Like, even the royal family now goes out on the balcony all the time, yeah. Right? So It's like their thing. And Prince George made grumpy faces on it. I remember that. I was like 8. That September, the Lord Chancellor, who was Lord Audley Thomas, I think is his first name. Yeah, it is. Right. Reported Edward's rapid growth and vigor. And other accounts describe him as like a really tall and really happy kid. A lot of people have always thought that Edward was a sickly child just because he died really, really young. But that's been challenged by more recent historians because, like, there's records of Edward's, you know, health all over the place. At the age of 4, he fell ill with a life-threatening fever. But despite occasional illnesses and not very good eyesight, don't know where he got that from, Edward, he had really good health pretty much until the last six months of his life. So he probably wasn't actually that sickly. Kind of like Arthur, Prince of Wales, Henry's older brother. A lot of historians don't think that he was actually that sick of a kid. He just got really sick at the end.
Right.
Edward was initially placed in the care of Lady Margaret Bryan, Elizabeth's former governess. And I guess Mary's too, but like Mary had grown out of her. Yeah, Elizabeth was like 4. I don't know if 4, like, I feel like that's kind of early to get rid of like your first childhood governess, but like, I don't know. But I do think that they got rid of her and Elizabeth's just that they could have her have Mary. But then she got Catherine Champernowne, so she was good. She was fine. After Margaret Bryan, he had Blanche Herbert, who was Lady Troy, but her name is Blanche Herbert. Until the age of 6, it's not very old, Edward, he was brought up, as he put it later in his chronicle, which is like a thing that he wrote, among the women.
Oh.
I love little kids using big words. It's so funny. The former royal household established around Edward, the formal royal household established around Edward was at first under Sir William Sidney and later Richard Page, who was the stepfather of Edward's uncle, Edward's wife, Anne Stanhope, if you can follow that. Yeah, Edward Seymour's wife, not Edward Tudor, Jane Seymour's brother, Edward. Henry demanded like really, really good standards of security and cleanliness in his son's household, because Edward was, quote unquote, this whole realm's most precious jewel, end quote. Okay. I feel like that would give a kid a really big head.
Yeah, it's like, I'm the most important person here.
You have to be nice to me. Visitors described the prince, who was like really well provided with toys and comforts. He had his own troupe of minstrels, which is like just like a personal band that just follows you everywhere and sings whenever you want.
Nice.
As a, he was a contented child. I would be too. He has his own band. But now Edward's 6, so he has to start his formal education at 6. Right. Under Richard Cox and John Cheek. But he concentrated, as he recalled himself, on learning of tongues, of the scripture, of philosophy, and all liberal sciences at 6. At six, I was learning like how to spell like cat. That's actually not true. I was in a grade 2 class when I was in grade 1, but
yeah,
we learned like not that. I mean, it was technically a 1-2 split, but I didn't do any grade 1 work, and it was a real problem in grade 2 because when you have teachers that teach together in like the same pod, they share learning materials. So a lot of the like worksheets and stuff I'd already done.
You were a pro.
Yeah, but Zara would be like, Mrs. Reese, we already did this. And she was like,
well,
okay, go read. Just go read it in the hall. We also had some weird,
huge novel.
They gave us like a weird science project thing where they just gave us like a bunch of random materials that they found in like people's cupboards, and they're like, make a fake house with this.
Okay.
So they used to just send us out there and be like, go do it. We never finished it because we got so distracted all the time because we didn't have a teacher supervising us. They just send us out there alone, and we were 7. What do you want me to do? Yeah, so Edward would not have been allowed to do that. He would not have gotten to build houses, I don't think, or just goof off like Zara and I did constantly.
So.
He received tuition from Elizabeth's tutor, who, of course, but I think he and Elizabeth lived together sometimes, so it's fine. Roger Ascham, who's like really smart and really famous, I think. Yeah, he's chill. And Jean Belmain, he learned French, Spanish, and Italian, I guess, from them. In addition, he also is supposed to have studied geometry, and he played musical instruments, including the lute and the virginals. He collected globes and maps. Okay. And apparently he developed a grasp of, like, money that indicated a really high intelligence. Huh. Pop off, Edward. I guess he didn't follow Jane Seymour's way of learning. He's, no offense, Jane, but she didn't get a really good education. She isn't supposed to have been that smart. Edward's religious education is supposed, like, everyone assumes that it favored the reforming agenda. So, like, leaning more towards Protestantism instead of Catholicism. Because, you know, Church of England now. I don't know how Jane would have felt about that. I think she would have been a little upset. Yeah. She wouldn't have appreciated that, but she's dead, so they don't care. His religious, like, learnings and stuff were probably chosen by Thomas Cranmer, who was, like, a really big reformer. Both of his tutors, Cox and Cheek, were, like, reformed Catholics, or Erasmians. I don't know what that is. I guess it's just, like, another religion. But, like, I'm going to assume that it's based on the teachings of Erasmus, who's, like, a humanist. So that I don't think that that's, like, Catholic. Later, they were exiles in Mary's reign. Please. It says they were Marian exiles. I'm going to assume that that means exiles from Mary because she was burning people that weren't Catholic. Fun for them.
So fun.
I just, I don't know. I think that I would also have had to have been married in exile, and I don't think that would have been great for me.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm built for life on the run. But it's okay, because she's not queen yet. By 1549, okay, he is king, but, like, Henry actually hasn't died yet. This is just saying, we're talking about his education right now. By 1549, Edward wrote a treatise on the Pope as the Antichrist. That is my favorite Edward fact ever, is that he wrote a treatise on the Pope as Antichrist. Like, what? And he's 12. 1549, he's 12 years old. That's like my little brother making a little thing about why the Pope is Antichrist. Yeah. But many aspects of Edward's religion were essentially Catholic in his early years, because that's how Henry's were, including celebrating Mass and having reverence for images and relics of the saints.
Look at that.
I don't know. I don't even know any of the saints, but fun. I know that there's Saint Thomas More. He's a saint, even though I don't really like him. Sorry to all the Thomas More stands out there.
Because we know there's a lot
guess
of
you. There probably are, but I don't think they listen to this podcast. Both of Edward's sisters were really, like, attentive to their brother, and they visit him a lot. On one occasion, Elizabeth gave him a shirt that she made herself. I think she also embroidered it, because it says of her own working, and I'm pretty sure she embroidered stuff all the time. Edward took special content in Mary's company, although he got mad at her because she liked foreign dances. Okay. He wrote to her in 1546 that he loved her most, but we're talking about 1543 at the moment. Let's pop on back. In 1543, Henry invited his children to spend Christmas with him, which signaled his reconciliation with his daughters. After, because Catherine Parr, like, brought them back together. The following spring, he restored them to their place in the succession with a third succession act, which also provided for a regency council during Edward's minority. So, well, before Edward turns, like, 18 or whatever, he's going to have a council that helps rule on his behalf. This family harmony was much, like, it's mostly owed to the influence of Henry's new wife, Catherine Parr. Edward was really fond of Catherine Parr, called her his most dear mother, and in September 1546, he wrote to her that, "I received so many benefits from you that my mind can hardly grasp them."
Look at
I think that Catherine Parr didn't have any kids and was like, you know what? I'm gonna make this family be a family because that's what I want. I want to have kids. And so she just took these kids and made them hers. Which, you know what? That's a great thing to do because none of them had mothers. What, Dad? I'm recording. Go away. Bye. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you still there? Okay, good. Other children were brought to play with Edward. He just doesn't have friends. They just, like, bring him children to play with, I guess. It's kind of sad. Including the granddaughter of Edward's chamberlain, Sir William Sidney, who in adulthood recalled Edward as a marvelous sweet child of very mild and generous condition. So I guess he's just, like, chill. Edward was educated with sons of nobles who got appointed to attend upon him in what was kind of like a miniature court. Among these kids, Barnaby Fitzpatrick, who was the son of an Irish peer, became one of his best friends, and they were friends for a really long time. Barnaby. Edward was more devoted to his schoolwork than his classmates. And he seems to have outshone them. He was motivated to do his, like, duty in Henry's eyes, but he also, like, I think he liked to compete with his sister Elizabeth's academic prowess. When we talk about, like, the education of the three kids of Henry VIII, they all had really good educations, but Elizabeth and Edward actually enjoyed it. So, Edward's, possessions and everything around him was really, really nice. His rooms had Flemish tapestries in them, which were, like, really expensive. And his clothes, books, and cutlery were encrusted with precious jewels and gold because he's special.
So special.
Yeah, special. Like his father, Edward was fascinated by, like, the military. And many of his portraits show him wearing a gold dagger with a jeweled hilt, which is an imitation of Henry. Edward's Chronicle goes into really enthusiastic detail about English military campaigns against Scotland and France. He just really likes it. Cooper likes Fortnite. Edward Tudor liked military. So I guess that's just, yeah. On the 1st of July, 1543, Henry signed the Treaty of Greenwich with the Scots, which sealed the peace between them with Edward's betrothal to the 7-month-old Mary, Queen of Scots. Mary. The Scots were in, like, a weak bargaining position because they got defeated the previous November, I think, by the English. And Henry, who was, like, trying to unite the two realms, so, like, he didn't want them to be, like, two separate countries. He wanted to, like, rule Scotland, pretty much. Stipulated that Mary be handed over to him to be brought up in England. Because the thing is, if Mary and Edward are married, then, like, their kids will inherit the dual crown of Scotland and England.
I see. Yes.
But it's fine because Mary's son actually inherited the throne of England without marrying Edward. So, pop off, Mary. It's called Elizabeth Decided to Never Have Children.
Thanks,
Elizabeth. Thanks a lot, love. Honestly, we wouldn't have... We might not even be here, which maybe the First Nations people would like that if they hadn't come. So, Elizabeth, why didn't you have children? All of this led to us being here. Just saying. When the Scots actually canceled the treaty, they're like, you know what? No, in December 1543. And they renewed their alliance with France. And Henry was really, really, really pissed. I would be too. But also Henry has anger issues. So, like, it's even worse. In April 1544, he ordered Edward's uncle, Edward Seymour, to invade Scotland and put it all to fire and sword, burn Edinburgh down, I think, so razed and defaced when you have sacked and gotten what you can of it, as there may remain forever a perpetual memory of the vengeance of God lightened upon them for their falsehood and disloyalty. Basically, it's called the Rough Wooing. It's a war that continued into Edward's reign, and it was the most savage campaign ever launched by the English against the Scottish. They basically just, like, burned their towns and killed a bunch of them. Yeah. It's a little more complicated than that, but you can go research it yourself. I'm just giving you, like, the basics. The 9-year-old Edward wrote to his father and stepmother on January 10th, 1547 from Hertford, okay, thanking them for his New Year's gift of their portraits from life. I'm a little confused about that. Did they give him portraits of themselves for New Year's? That's a terrible present. I would be so mad if my parents were like, here's two pictures of us for your Christmas present. Mom and Dad. Like, thank you, but no. I don't know. Maybe he's just excited to add it to his collection. He probably had a bunch of portraits. But unfortunately, he probably treasured this portrait because 18 days later, Henry was dead on January 28th, 1547. Those close to the throne, led by Edward Seymour and William Paget, agreed to delay the announcement of the king's death until arrangements had been made for a smooth succession. So Seymour and Sir Anthony Brown, who is the master of the horse, wrote to collect Edward from Hertford and brought him to Enfield, where Lady Elizabeth was living. He and Elizabeth were then told of the death of their father and heard a reading of the will. And I'm pretty sure that I heard that when they were told, they, like, cried together for, like, a really long time. They were just, like, hugging each other and crying. Yeah, because Edward's now got to be king, and Elizabeth's dad is dead, and both their dads are dead. Like, it's just really sad. And I'm pretty sure that's true, that they just, like, cried together. R.I.P. R.I.P. Henry. Mary was not at this meeting. yeah, I guess she was probably, like, farther away or somewhere else or something. The Lord Chancellor, Thomas, this guy again, Wriothesley, announced Henry's death to Parliament on January 31st, which is, like, quite a few days after he died, and general proclamations of Edward's succession were ordered. The new king was taken to the Tower of London, where he was welcomed with a great shot of ordnance in all places thereabout, as well as out of the tower as out of the ship. So basically, they were just really excited that he was there. I feel like maybe they weren't actually that excited because they're like, oh crap, we have a boy as our king now. But they're letting him think that they're excited. The following day, the nobles of the realm like swore their allegiance and their obedience to Edward at the tower, and Edward Seymour was announced as Lord Protector. Henry VIII was buried at Windsor on February 16th in the same tomb as Jane Seymour as he had wished. Edward was crowned. He's now Edward VI, because, the last king who was Edward was Edward V. He probably died in the tower, so, and for him. And he was also a boy king. Gotta love boy kings. They'll die really young. Or they're really crappy kings. Boy kings, like, don't work out well. Edward was crowned at Westminster Abbey 4 days later on February the 20th. The ceremonies were shortened because it was like a really long ceremony and they were worried that it was going to tire Edward out because he was still little. They were like, he's 9, guys. I don't think that we can do this. I mean, where was the same energy when Anne was 5 months pregnant? But okay. But I don't think they could have shortened it because then people would be like, she's not actually queen. Because you didn't crown her properly. And everyone, like, besties, she was running out to throw up every 2 seconds. But also, some of them had to be cut because the Reformation had rendered some of them inappropriate. Fun. On the eve of the coronation, Edward progressed on horseback from the tower to the Palace of Westminster through a bunch of crowds and some pageants. Many were based on the pageants for a previous boy king, Henry VI. Henry VI went, like, actually insane and got thrown off his throne by Edward IV. So I don't really know why we're trying to emulate him, but go off, I guess. Like, I don't know. He did not have a fun time. And he, like, died probably, I think it was him that died by, like, being suffocated with a pillow or something. Or that's what they think he died of. I don't really remember. But they did have, like, some nice pageants for Edward that made him happy. There was, like, a Spanish tightrope walker who tumbled and played many pretty toys outside St. Paul's Cathedral, and he laughed at that. He thought that was funny. He's 9. He's, God, little kids being king. Not okay. Henry VIII's will named 16 executors who were to act as Edward's regency council until he reached the age of 18. Those executors were supplemented by 12 men of council, I don't know, who would assist the executors when called on. The final state of Henry's will was like a really big subject of controversy. Some historians think that those who were close to Henry manipulated either him or the will itself to ensure like that power was shared out to their benefit, both material power and like religious power. Because in this reading, the composition of the Privy Chamber shifted towards the end of 1546 in favor of the reforming faction, and two leading conservative privy councillors were removed from the center of power. So some people were like, oh yeah, they're just making it so that it's like a reforming gang. Whatever the case, Henry's death was followed by a lavish handout of lands and honors to the new power group. The will contained an unfulfilled gifts clause, which was added at the very last minute, which allowed Henry's executors to freely distribute lands and honors to themselves and to the court, particularly to Edward Seymour, 1st Earl of Hertford, the new king's uncle, who then became Lord Protector of the Realm, Governor of the King's Person, and Duke of Somerset. He added himself a lot of titles. Fun. In fact, Henry VIII's will actually didn't provide for the appointment of a protector. He didn't want one for his son. He thought that they should just have a regency council because it rules collectively by like majority decision. So basically it's not like a dictatorship. It's like a democracy. Nevertheless, though, a few days after Henry died on 4th of February, the executors chose to invest basically, like, he's basically a king, kind of, in Edward Seymour, because, like, Edward Tudor listens to him, right? He's his uncle. And also Edward's nine, so they can just kind of do whatever they want. 13 out of the 16 people who had been named on, like, the Regency Council agreed to Edward's appointment as protector. Because they justified it as their joint decision by virtue of the authority of Henry's will. Somerset, that's what we call Edward Seymour. Somerset may have done a deal with some of the executors because they almost all received, like, bribes, basically. It's known that he did that with William Paget, who was the private secretary to Henry VIII, and he also did that with Anthony Brown of the Privy Chamber. Somerset's appointment was in keeping with historical precedent. So there is usually like a Lord Protector. I'm pretty sure that if Henry died when Anne Boleyn was still married to him, Thomas Boleyn was supposed to be Lord Protector of Elizabeth while she was little. Because I remember that there's in a book I was reading, Norfolk was mad that Boleyn got the job instead of him. Yeah. Somerset's eligibility for the role was also reinforced because he had had military successes in Scotland and France. In March 1547, he secured letters from Edward, that King Edward now, granting him the almost like monarchical, basically king-like right to appoint members to the Privy Council himself and to consult them only when he wished. So in the words of historian Geoffrey Elton, from that moment, his autocratic system was complete. Very, very true, Geoffrey. Very, very true. Basically, Somerset from that point kind of just ruled by proclamation. So he would call on the Privy Council basically to do a little more than just like rubber stamp. So like put like a yes on his decision. So like he made them and then he just called them in. They're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. His takeover of power was very smooth and efficient. The imperial ambassador, Francois van der Delft, that's just like three different words, but reported that he governs everything absolutely. And Paget was his secretary, although he did predict trouble from John Dudley, Viscount Lisle, who had been recently raised to Earl of Warwick in the Sherrod of Honours. Fun. In fact, in the early weeks of his protectorate, Somerset was only challenged by the Chancellor, Thomas Wriothesley. They did try to buy him off with the Earldom of Southampton, but it didn't really work. R.I.P. And by his own brother, Thomas Seymour. Gross. Thomas Rioffizzoli, who was a religious conservative, objected to Somerset's assumption of monarchical power over the council, but he then found himself abruptly dismissed from the chancellorship on charges of selling some of his offices to delegates. So basically, he said no, and Edward was like, bye! Somerset faced far less manageable opposition from his younger brother, Thomas Seymour. As King Edward's uncle, Thomas Seymour thought that he should get the governorship of the king. So, like, yes. He wanted Edward to, like, live with him, I guess. I don't know. And he also wanted a greater share of power because he was like, I'm his uncle too, Edward. Somerset tried to buy his brother off with a barony, an appointment to the Lord Admiralship, and a seat on the Privy Council. But Thomas didn't really care. He wanted power. Yeah. Basically, this begins the war between Edward's uncles, both trying to make Edward like them more. Over this?
But, like, you know.
Not a real war. They just, like, fought. Yeah. Thomas Seymour began smuggling pocket money to King Edward, telling him that Somerset held the purse strings too tight, and he was making Edward look like a beggarly king. He also urged him to throw off the protector within 2 years and bear rule as other kings do. But Edward was, like, taught to defer to the council, and he failed to cooperate. But, yeah, so basically on one side, Thomas Seymour is like, look, Edward, here's money. I'm such a nice uncle. Your uncle Edward's so mean to you. He doesn't treat you like a real king. You're a real king, not a kid, Edward. You should do what you want. And then on the other side, Uncle Edward is like, your Uncle Thomas is irresponsible. You need to listen to me. I know what's best for you. You have to listen to the council. And Edward's like, my dad told me to listen to the council, so I'm going to listen to my Uncle Edward. In the spring of 1547, Thomas Seymour, using Edward's support to get around Somerset's opposition, Thomas Seymour secretly married Henry VIII's widow, Catherine Parr, whose Protestant household included the 11-year-old Lady Jane Grey and the 13-year-old Lady Elizabeth. Not gonna lie, though, guys, before he married Catherine Parr, he tried to ask if he could marry Mary Tudor and Elizabeth Tudor. So, Catherine Parr knew that she was third choice. Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people know that either. I don't think six writers seem to care. She's like, we love each other. And I'm like, well, yeah, you did before. But, like, here's the thing, honey. He wanted power, not you. Kind of sad, low-key. But, yeah, in summer 1548, Thomas Seymour sexually assaulted his stepdaughters. Well, his wife's stepdaughter. I don't know what Elizabeth would be to him. His nephew's sister. That's what we're going to call her. But, like, it's worse if, like, they're related. It's creepier that way. I mean, it's gross anyway, but, like, it's weirder if you do it to your relative. A pregnant Catherine Parr, because, you know, everything just sucks, discovered Thomas Seymour embracing Lady Elizabeth. As a result, Elizabeth was removed from Catherine Parr's household and transferred to Sir Anthony Denny's. That September, Catherine Parr died shortly after childbirth, and Thomas Seymour promptly resumed his attentions to Elizabeth by letter, planning to marry her. Let's remember, everybody, she is, like, oh, it's 1548. She was born in 1533. Nope. She's not very old. She's, like, 15. Grace, that's not a fun time. No, but Elizabeth was receptive because she's 15. She doesn't, 15-year-olds don't think. Teenagers don't think. I'll say that because I am one. She was receptive, but because she was smart and also like Edward, she wasn't going to agree to anything unless it was permitted by the Privy Council. Unfortunately for Thomas Seymour, that didn't happen for him. In January 1549, the council had him arrested on various charges. Yay! Including embezzlement at the Bristol Mint. King Edward, Jane Seymour, you're dead. I don't want to drag you into this. Your brother, Thomas Seymour, was accused of planning to marry Lady Jane Grey. Oh. That's gross. She's even younger than Elizabeth. She's the same age as Edward. She's 12.
Wow.
No. She's like 3 days older than Edward or something. or like 3 days younger. I don't know. They're born in like the same week. Yeah. King Edward actually testified about the pocket money. Wait, no. Seymour wanted to marry Edward to Lady Jane Grey, but you know what? Let's be honest. He would have married her if he could. Actually, can't think. Lack of clear evidence for treason ruled out a trial. So Seymour was condemned instead by an act of attainder and beheaded on March 20th, 1549. R.I.P. to Thomas Seymour's head. I hate you. You don't get a rest in peace. It's rest in problems, Thomas Seymour. Problems. Rest in problems. During 1548, England was like, there's a lot of social unrest in the country. After April 1549, a series of armed revolts broke out because the people were upset. The two most serious rebellions, which required major military intervention to put down, were in Devon and in Cornwall and in Norfolk. Devon and Cornwall and in Norfolk. Yeah, there's two of them. The first, that's sometimes called the Prayer Book Rebellion, arose from the imposition of Protestantism. I don't know what that means. I think it's just called, we're mad that you're making us Protestants. The second, led by a tradesman called Robert Kett, was mostly about the encroachment of landlords on common grazing ground. So once again, it's called, we're peasants and we have no rights. A complex aspect of the social unrest was that the protesters believed that they were acting legitimately against enclosing landlords with the protector's support. They were convinced that the landlords were the lawbreakers. I don't really know if they were. Search it up yourselves. Just letting you know that Edward had some rebellions that happened during his time as king. The disastrous events of 1549 were taken as evidence of a colossal failure of government. Yay! And the council, because they understand that Edward is a puppet and is also 12, laid the responsibility at the protector's door. So, yeah. In July 1549, Paget wrote to Somerset, "Every man of the council have misliked your proceedings. Would to God that, at the first stir, you had followed the matter hotly and caused justice to be ministered in solemn fashion to the terror of others." The sequence of events that led to Somerset's removal from power has often been called a coup. A coup, yeah. Fun. A coup d'etat. I can't speak French. I have like a 97 in class, but I can't speak it. I just like make things up. By October 1st, 1549, Somerset had been alerted that his rule faced a serious threat. So instead of being a normal person, he issued a proclamation calling for assistance, basically kidnapped Edward. He took possession of his person and withdrew for safety to Windsor Castle, which was fortified. Right. So, like, they were safer there. Basically, he, like, kidnapped his nephew. Edward wrote while they were in Windsor Castle, "Methinks I am in prison."
All right, then.
Okay. All right, Edward, it's almost his birthday. I hope he got out by his birthday. Oh, yeah, he did. He got out by his birthday. Meanwhile, a united council was publishing details of Somerset's government mismanagement. They made it clear that the protector's power came from them and that Henry VIII's will hadn't wanted it to happen. On October 11th, one day before Edward's birthday, the council had Somerset arrested and they brought him to Richmond. Wait. So he got out before his birthday. Yay. Edward summarized the charges against Somerset in his chronicle. He said, "Ambition, vainglory, entering into rash wars in mine youth, negligent looking on New Haven, enriching himself of my treasure, following his own opinion, and doing all by his own authority, etc." This boy is just extra. Yeah. I think he's just really extra. In February 1550, so it's a year later, well, not a year later, but like a few months later, John Dudley, Earl of Warwick, emerged as the leader of the council and, in effect, as Somerset's successor. Somerset was released from the Tower and restored to the council, but in 1552, he was executed for felony because he schemed to overthrow Dudley's regime. So, fun for him. Edward noted his uncle's death in his chronicle and said, "The Duke of Somerset had his head cut off upon Tower Hill between 8 and 9 o'clock this morning." So I guess he doesn't seem very sad about it. Yeah. Until recent decades, Somerset's reputation with historians was really high in view of his many proclamations that appeared to, like, back the common people against the landowning class. More recently, however, he has often been portrayed as an arrogant and aloof ruler, lacking in political and administrative skills.
Yeah.
You know what? I think that's kind of fair. In contrast, Somerset's successor, John Dudley, Earl of Warwick, made Duke of Northumberland in 1551, was once regarded by historians as simply a grasping schemer who elevated himself and enriched himself at the expense of the crown. Since the 1970s, though, the administrative and economic achievements of his regime have been recognized, and he has been credited with restoring the authority of the Royal Council and returning the government to, like, an even keel, because Somerset's protectorate kind of messed it up a little bit. Yeah. As Edward was growing up, he was able to understand more government business, but his actual involvement in decisions has long been a matter of debate. And during the 20th century, historians have come up with a bunch of different possibilities. Basically, either they think that he was just a puppet that was articulate and, like, could talk, or he was a mature, precocious, and essentially adult king. So, like, they can't really agree. A special council for the estate was created when Edward was 14, and he got to choose the members himself. Yay, Edward. Pop off. In the weekly meetings with this council, he was, like, he got to hear the debating of things that were most important. A major point of contact with the king was the Privy Chamber, and there he got to work closely with William Cecil and William Peter, who are the principal secretaries. Cecil is going to be, like, Elizabeth's bestie when she comes onto the throne, so... The king's greatest influence was in matters of religion, where the council followed the strongly Protestant policy that Edward got to, he favored that, so he got to choose religion, basically. The Duke of Northumberland's mode of operation was very different from Somerset's. He was careful to make sure that he always commanded a majority of councillors. He encouraged, like, a working council and used it to legitimize his authority, because, like, Somerset had just kind of done everything he wanted, so he's like, oh no, but the council supports what I want to do. Because he lacked Somerset's blood relationship with Edward, he added members to the council from his own faction in order to control it. And he also added members of his family to the royal household. Woohoo. He saw, like, he knew that if he was going to achieve dominance, he needed to be in total control of the council. In the words of historian John Gee, like Somerset, he became quasi-king. The difference was that he managed the bureaucracy on the pretense that Edward had assumed full sovereignty, whereas Somerset had asserted the right to near sovereignty as protector. So Edward's still not really getting to do anything. R.I.P. Edward. By 1552, confidence in, like, the money, so basically money got better, prices fell and trade at last improved. Though a full economic recovery, because here's the thing, Henry, like, messed up their economics and, like, everything about money in their country, like, really badly. So they're trying to recover it. But a full economic recovery wasn't actually achieved until Elizabeth's reign. However, its origins did lie in the Duke of Northumberland's policies. The regime also cracked down on the widespread embezzlement of government finances, and it carried out a thorough review of revenue collection practices, which has actually been called one of the more remarkable achievements of Tudor administration. So I guess pop off, Duke of Northumberland? I don't know. In the matter of religion, the regime of Northumberland followed the same policy as that of Somerset. They supported an increasingly vigorous program of reform. So, Jane Seymour is rolling over in her grave. I feel kind of bad, because she was, like, probably, like, oh, I'm gonna help return the country because Anne Boleyn made it crap. I'm gonna make it, like, Catholic again. And my son's going to help do that. And then Edward's over here like, you're all Protestant. The Pope is the Antichrist. I don't care. It's a little sad. Although Edward's practical influence on government was very limited, his intense Protestantism made a reforming administration like it had to happen. His succession was managed by the reforming faction, who continued to be in power throughout his reign. The man that Edward trusted most was Thomas Cranmer, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and he introduced a series of religious reforms that revolutionized English church, from one that was basically Catholic, just without the Pope, to one that was institutionally Protestant. The confiscation of church property, so basically the dissolution of the monasteries, that had begun under Henry VIII resumed under Edward, notably with the dissolution of the chantries. I don't know what a chantry is. But it's a Catholic church thing, I guess, to the great monetary advantage of the crown and the new owners of the seized property. Church reform was therefore just as much a political as a religious policy under Edward VI. By the end of his reign, the church had been financially ruined, and most of the property of the bishops transferred into lay hands. So thanks, Edward. This is why Mary had to burn people, because you financially ruined the church, and she probably was pissed. King Edward was said to have read 12 chapters of scripture daily and enjoyed sermons. He was commemorated by John Fox as a godly imp. I don't know what that means. A godly imp. Okay. Edward was depicted during his life and after as a new Josiah, who is the biblical king who destroyed the idols of Baal. He could be kind of priggish, though, and like his anti-Catholicism. And he once asked Catherine Parr to persuade Lady Mary to attend no longer to foreign dances and merriments, which do not become the most Christian princess. Fun. They're fighting. The girls are fighting. After 1551, the Reformation advanced further with the approval and encouragement of Edward, and he now began to actually exert more personal influence in his role as supreme head of the church. The new changes were also a response to criticism from reformers like John Hooper, Bishop of Gloucester, and the Scot John Knox, who was employed as a minister in Newcastle upon Tyne under the Duke of Northumberland, and whose preaching at court actually prompted Edward to get rid of kneeling at communion. Unfortunately, Cranmer was unable to implement the reforms that he wanted to implement once it became clear in spring 1553 that King Edward, upon whom the entire Reformation in England depended, was dying. Rip. In February 1553, Edward became ill, and by June, after several improvements and relapses, he was in a hopeless condition. The king's death and the succession of Mary, because she's Catholic, would jeopardize the English Reformation, and Edward's council had many reasons to fear it, because they've been pushing for it so much. Mary's going to hurt them. They know that. Edward himself opposed Mary's succession, not only on religious grounds, but also on those of legitimacy and male inheritance, which also applied to Elizabeth. Gross, Edward. Stop being sexist. Also, Edward, just saying that your mother was also married under the Church of England, so, like... Yeah. Mary could have a case for you being a legitimate buddy. She could have one.
Yeah.
Just saying. Yeah. He composed a draft document headed My Device for the Succession, in which he decided that he's going to change the succession. Okay. Most probably inspired by Henry's precedent. He passed over the claims of his half-sisters and at last settled the crown on his first cousin, once removed, the 16-year-old Lady Jane Grey, who on May 25th, 1553, had married Lord Guildford Dudley, who was a younger son of the Duke of Northumberland. Huh, curious. In his document, Edward provided, in case of lack of issue of his body, for the succession of male heirs only. That is Jane Grey's mother's male heirs, Jane's or her sister's. So basically, Jane couldn't take the throne, right. But if she had boys, they could. But the thing is, he's dying right now. Jane is just married. Her mother is, I don't think she's that old, but like she's had three daughters, and I'm pretty sure she had like several miscarriages.
Yeah.
So maybe they shouldn't be trying to make her have another baby. And then Jane's sisters are both younger than her. So I don't know who he thinks is going to inherit when he dies in like a month. Just saying, Edward, maybe you should. But luckily, not luckily for Lady Jane Grey, but Northumberland kind of was being smart. He was also maybe being a little greedy. But it is possible that he persuaded Edward because Edward's death was approaching. And Edward altered the wording so that Jane and her sisters themselves could succeed. But Edward said that Jane had the right to the throne only as an exception to male rule, which was an example not to be followed if Jane or her sisters had only daughters. He's like, yeah, she can rule, but only if there's no boys. Yeah. In the final document, both Mary and Elizabeth were excluded because of bastardy, since both had been declared bastards under Henry VIII and never made illegitimate again.
Yeah.
This reason could, both sisters. The thing is with Mary and Elizabeth, if one of them is legitimate, the other one isn't. So you can't just pick one.
Yeah.
You have to have both of them illegitimate. Honestly, I think that both of them should be legitimate, so because even if Henry and Catherine weren't legitimately married, you can still have a child be legitimate in good faith, which means that their parents thought that they were married. So maybe they could have done that, and then both of them could have been legitimate, but Henry couldn't have that happen because he's not nice. Or Elizabeth could have been in good faith, yeah, as well, because both of them, you know what I'm saying? It's just annoying. The provisions to alter the succession actually directly contravened Henry VIII's Third Succession Act of 1543 and have been described as bizarre and illogical. Yeah, kind of a little weird, Edward. In early June, Edward personally supervised the drafting of a clean version of this will by lawyers, to which he lent his signature in six places. Then on June 15th, he summoned a bunch of high-ranking judges to his sickbed, and he commanded them on their allegiance, like, angrily, apparently he, like, yelled at them, to prepare his device as letters patent and announce that he would have these passed in Parliament. Okay, Edward. His next measure was to have leading counselors and lawyers sign a bond in his presence, in which they agreed faithfully to perform Edward's will after he died. A few months later, Chief Justice Edward Montagu recalled that when he and his colleagues had raised legal objections to this, like saying no, Northumberland had threatened them, like, really madly. He was angry, and he was trembling with anger. And he also said that he would fight in his shirt with any man in that quarrel. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's, like, that guy could have been, like, making it up to make Mary not mad at him, though. So, grain of salt. Grain of salt. At last, on June 21st, the device was signed by over 100 notables, including counselors, peers, archbishops, bishops, and sheriffs. Many of them later claimed that they had been bullied into doing so by Northumberland, although, in the words of Edward's biographer Jennifer Loach, few of them gave any clear indication of reluctance at the time. So, Mary would have been mad at them if they had, you know, been like, oh yeah, totally, let's pass over Mary, and now she's queen. They could have been trying to save themselves by being like, we were bullied by Northumberland. It wasn't our fault. We really believed it was you, Mary. Yeah, so like, it was now common knowledge that Edward was dying, and foreign diplomats suspected that there was some scheme to get Mary out of the succession. France found the prospect of the emperor's cousin on the English throne disagreeable and were engaged in secret talks with Northumberland, indicating support on the succession of Jane Grey. The diplomats were certain that the overwhelming majority of the English people did actually back Mary, but nevertheless believed that Queen Jane would be successfully established. I don't know what they thought was going to happen if most of the English people back Mary. They know Mary wants the throne. Like, she's gonna obviously revolt. She's not that well behaved. For centuries, the attempt to alter the succession has mostly been seen as a one-man plot by the Duke of Northumberland. Since the 1970s, though, many historians have attributed the actual, like, thought of the devise and the insistence on its implementation to Edward's initiative, which is probably also true. I'm gonna really mess this up. It's very Irish. I'm very sorry. It's like Diarmaid MacCulloch. D-I-A-R-M-A-I-D and then MacCulloch. Sorry, I'm sorry. Has made out Edward's teenage dreams of founding an evangelical realm of Christ, while David Starkey stated that Edward had a couple of cooperators, but the driving will was his. He is a 15-year-old boy. I'm just going to say that. They are really hard to deal with sometimes. So, yeah, he definitely could have been like, you know what? Too bad. This is what I'm doing. Whatever the degree of his contribution, Edward was convinced that his word was law, and he fully endorsed disinheriting his half-sisters. That's nice, Edward. Barring Mary from the succession was a cause in which the young king firmly believed. But now he's gonna die. Edward became ill during January 1533 with a fever and cough that just kept getting worse. The imperial ambassador, Jean Scave, I don't know, reported that he suffers a good deal when the fever is upon him, especially from a difficulty in drawing his breath, which is due to the compression of the organs on the right side. Yeah. Edward felt well enough in early April to take, like, to go on a walk in the park at Westminster and to move to Greenwich, but by the end of the month, he had weakened again. by May 7th, he was, like, way better, and the royal doctors were like, yeah, guys, no, he's totally gonna recover. Yeah, a few days later, he was watching the ships on the Thames. I know how I pronounce it, my brain is dying. Sitting at his window. However, he relapsed Edward. Again. Oh, Edward. Child. On the 11th of June, the imperial ambassador, who had an informant in the king's household, reported that sometimes when he, like, coughs, sometimes it's, ew, like, what comes out of his mouth is, like, greenish, yellow, and black, and sometimes it's pink, like the color of blood. Yeah, poor baby Edward. Oh, honey. Now his doctors believe that he was suffering from a separating tumor of the lung and admitted that Edward's life was beyond recovery. Soon his legs became so swollen that he had to lie on his back and he lost the strength to resist the disease. Oh. To his tutor, John Cheek, he whispered, I am glad to die. Baby, no. Sweetheart, no. Edward made his final appearance in public on July 1st when he showed himself at his window in Greenwich Palace. This actually horrified those people who saw him because he was so thin and, like, wasting away. He looked really sick. And during the next 2 days, large crowds arrived hoping to see the king again. But on July 3rd, they were told that the weather was too chilly for him to appear. Edward died at the age of 15 at Greenwich Palace at 8 p.m. on July 6th, 1533. According to John Fox's legendary account of his death, his last words were, I am faint. Lord, have mercy upon me and take my spirit. He was buried in the Henry VII Lady Chapel at Westminster Abbey on August 8th, 1533, with Reformed rites performed by Thomas Cranmer. Yeah, so a bunch of people were, like, really sad, obviously, because he's dead. But the cause of Edward's death is not certain. Oh, he's twins with his mom. Twins! As with many royal deaths in the 16th century, because it's the 16th century, rumors of poisoning were prevalent, just like Catherine of Aragon, but no evidence has been found to support these. Who wants to poison him? Actually, yeah. You know what? I'm not going to answer that because it would probably be Mary.
No.
I don't think she would, though. I don't think she'd be able to do that. Because she just, like, locked Elizabeth up. She never actually killed her. And Elizabeth was, like, actively... Well, she thought Elizabeth was actively working against her. The Duke of Northumberland, whose unpopularity was underlined by the events that followed Edward's death, was widely believed to have ordered the imagined poisoning. Oh, I guess that's because if Edward dies, then Jane Grey and his own son, Guildford, become king and queen. Fun. Another theory held that Edward had been poisoned by Catholics seeking to bring Mary to the throne. But the surgeon who opened Edward's chest after his death found that, like, the disease was the disease of the lungs. The Venetian ambassador reported that Edward had died of consumption, which we now call tuberculosis, which is a diagnosis that's accepted by many historians. Some of them believe that Edward contracted tuberculosis after a bout of measles and smallpox in 1552 that suppressed his natural immunity to this disease. Another person suggests instead that his symptoms were typical of acute... Oh, I'm going to mess this word up. It's a really big word. Bronchopneumonia. Bronchopneumonia.
There you go.
I guess it's like bronchitis and pneumonia, like, mixed. I don't know. I've had both. Not fun. Leading to a suppurating pulmonary infection or lung abscess. Ooh, no, not another one. Septicemia and kidney failure. Yeah. Although Edward reigned for only 6 years and he died at the age of 15, his reign did make a lasting contribution to the English Reformation and the structure of the Church of England. Because the last decade of Henry VIII's reign had kind of seen like a stalling of the Reformation and a drifting back to more conservative values. Yeah, I guess Jane Seymour helped a little bit, even though she was dead for that entire time, pretty much. By contrast, Edward's reign saw like really radical progress in the Reformation. In those 6 years that he was reigning, the church, like, transferred from an essentially Catholic structure to one that is usually identified as Protestant. In particular, the introduction of the Book of Common Prayer, the Ordinal of 1550, and Cranmer's 42 articles formed the basis for English church practices that actually still continue to this day. So pop off, Edward, and Thomas Cranmer, pop off. Edward himself did fully approve these changes. And though they were the work of reformers like Thomas Cranmer, Hugh Latimer, and Nicholas Ridley, and backed by Edward's determinedly of the evangelical council, the fact of the king's religion was a catalyst in the acceleration of the Reformation during his reign. Yay, Edward. Good job, buddy. Proud of you. Way to be Protestant. On Mary's death in 1558, the English Reformation resumed its course, and most of the reforms instituted during Edward's reign were actually reinstated in the Elizabethan religious settlement. Queen Elizabeth replaced Mary's counselors and bishops with ex-Edwardians, like William Cecil, Northumberland's former secretary, and Richard Cox, Edward's old tutor, who preached an anti-Catholic sermon at the opening of Parliament in 1559. Okay. Parliament passed an Act of Uniformity the following spring that restored, with some modifications, Cranmer's Prayer Book of 1552, and the 39 Articles of 1563 were actually largely based on Cranmer's 42 Articles. The theological developments of Edward's reign provided a vital source of reference for Elizabeth's religious policies, although, like, the internationalism of the Edwardian Reformation was never revived. So Edward's Reformation helped Elizabeth's Reformation, and part of Elizabeth's legacy is her Reformation. So pop off, Edward. I feel like he'd be mad that he helped his sister do that, because he would have wanted to let himself. But it still happened. So that is all that I have for you today, because Edward died. So fun. Not fun. It is actually our spring break, so I'm actually gonna have time to research this week
So
Grace, think, what are they gonna do today?
People have responsibilities. We have responsibilities. We have stuff to do. But today, just like, do nothing if it makes you feel better. Just like, you know, just like chill, relax, recharge yourself. Yeah. You know, you need a break sometimes. It's okay. I painted a picture yesterday.
Yeah.
Out in the sun, because it was really nice out yesterday. Have you heard of the dinosaurs in love?
Did you? That's good.
I painted the dinosaurs in love.
I love that little girl.
Dinosaurs
love. Eating people. Dinosaurs.
They eat fruit and cucumber.
Dinosaurs having a party.
I'll send you a picture, actually.
Aww. Okay. I don't know. You should go follow us on Instagram at notsobloodypairy_podcast. We've gotten a few new followers lately, so, like, welcome, everyone. Go follow us on Twitter at @bloody_not, because it's really awkward for me to just, like, post for just Katie from Queen's Podcast. It, like, makes me uncomfortable because, you should go follow Grace on TikTok at @thelovely_bookworm, even though she's not posting lately. Things. She actually has. She's gotten better. Don't follow me on TikTok because I don't post anything. You can go follow our podcast TikTok at @notsobloodymary_podcast as well. If more people follow, I'll post more things. Just saying. Okay. You all need to still follow the rules, because I want to be able to work at day camp this summer. And if you manage to get it canceled, I will also cry. And also, I really want to do at least part of American history in class, because my favorite teacher in, like, the whole universe is teaching that. And so, like, I need to be in the room with her. Okay. Yeah. Okay, guys.
We appreciate it.
You are all awesome. Thank you so much for listening. And you are so cool. Just remember that. And have a really, 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 really good day. Yeah. We're sending you a kiss on your forehead right now.
Bye.
For you. And yeah.